Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Amy Eddings in for Brian Lehrer here on WNYC, and it's not just Friday, it's Follow-Up Friday, where we dig a little deeper into some of the interesting things that came up during the week. Today's follow-up is about a clip Brian played Tuesday on the show. British singer Billy Bragg has penned a protest song about Rupert Murdoch and the News of the World scandal.
Someone's hiding in the bushes with a telephoto lens, while their editor assures them the means justify the ends. 'Cause we only hunt celebrities and it's all a bit of fun, but the Scousers never buy the sun.
Huh? What? It's a pretty straightforward critique of British tabloid behavior, but that last line confused our American ears. Take a listen.
A bit of fun, but the Scousers never buy the sun.
Here's the backstory to just why, in Bragg's words, the Scousers never buy the sun. First, you should know that a Scouser is a colloquial name for residents of Liverpool, and that the Sun is the daily tabloid owned by News International, Rupert Murdoch's newspaper empire. The story of that line in Bragg's song goes back to the so-called Hillsborough disaster. In 1989, 96 people were crushed to death at a soccer match at Hillsborough between Sheffield and Liverpool football clubs. Soon after, The Sun ran a front-page story accusing Liverpool fans of causing the riot, obstructing the police, and even urinating on the bodies of those who died at Hillsborough. These reports were completely unfounded, and as a result, many residents of Liverpool staged a boycott against The Sun. That grudge continues today. 22 years later, the Sun's circulation in Liverpool is well below that of any other major city in England. Many newsstands still refuse to carry the paper. Writing in The Guardian this week, Billy Bragg said, quote, "As I listened to the unfolding reports of the phone hacking story last week, it occurred to me that the Scousers had been right about News International all along." And now you know. Also, follow-up Friday, just wanted to mention Attorney General Eric Holder spoke today for the first time about the News Corp phone hacking scandal. He says his office is responding to calls from members of Congress for an investigation into whether 9/11 victims' phones were hacked. We had a conversation yesterday about whether the probe going on in Britain could extend to Rupert Murdoch's empire here in the United States. If you want to read more about the history of Liverpool and the Sun, there's a link on our show page. You can also tell us about any other examples of long-standing media grudges or boycotts. We'd like to wish a happy one-week birthday to the country of South Sudan after a January referendum in which 99% of voters approved secession from the north. South Sudan became an independent nation on midnight, July 9th, 1 week ago. Yesterday, South Sudan officially became a United Nations member state. With me now is Wasil Ali, deputy editor-in-chief of Sudan Tribune, a nonprofit website based in France. He's in Washington, D.C. this morning. Mr. Ali, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning.
Good morning. Along also with us is Jose Halsenbeck, head of mission with Doctors Without Borders. She joins us from Juba, the capital and largest city in South Sudan. Jose, hello from New York City.
Hello from Juba as well.
And listeners, there's just a delay on that line because of the distance, so please bear with us. Wasil Ali, tell us about what goes into becoming an independent state. What kind of political structures are being put into place in South Sudan, and what are the main challenges facing this task?
Well, this week, the president of Southern Sudan, Salva Kiir, has dissolved the government and just assigned the minister as caretakers, pending consultation to form a new government. They have promised that it will be inclusive government. Obviously, it's still going to be dominated by the Sudan People Liberation Movement, but I think what they have in mind is to bring in more of the opposition and more independent figures into the government. Obviously, the Southern Sudan has enormous challenges ahead of it. First of all is building institutions that will be able to run the new state. Also, the challenges of quelling rebellions that have been going on since the beginning of this year, different state by military officers. There are attempts to bring them to the negotiation table to end the rebellion. And more importantly, I think they will have the enormous task of trying to combat corruption and build transparency and accountability. The United States announced that there's going to be a conference. That's a donors conference in next September. They asked the government of Southern Sudan to come with ideas of how they're going to promote accountability and transparency in the government before they get to see the money.
Over the last week, we've seen jubilant images of the new flag being waved, the new national anthem being sung. One week later, Jose, does that jubilation continue? What's the mood among the new South Sudanese?
Yes, of course, people are still very happy, but I think at the same time, people are also seeing the challenges, and I would, in that sense, want to add a challenge. I mean, this country will still need to develop many, many services. Of course, in our interest, healthcare is one of them. There is still a lot to be done. We do see that there will be changes coming in the coming months. There will be more international organizations. The Ministry of Health is establishing itself as well, but it will be many years before there will be a good functioning health system to which everyone has access. That is still a major concern for us as an organization.
How much collaboration is there between the new South Sudanese government and your organization and nonprofit groups like yours?
I mean, I think these are things that are still starting to develop. It really is very, very early stages. And I think there will be, you know, different things ongoing at the same time. As the country develops, as the services develop, there are still a lot of humanitarian issues, health issues, that will need addressing as well. Malnutrition is one of them, maternal and child health. We are in the middle of an outbreak of a disease called Kala-Azar. Those things are ongoing, and there is no capacity to deal with that. And so international organizations will still have to be present to be able to deal with those kinds of crises.
Wasil Ali, your paper recently reported on efforts by the South Sudanese government to stabilize food production within the country. They're providing aid to farmers, calling on them to increase production. How much of the solution to the food shortage is to be found within the country, and how much will have to come from trade and outside aid?
Unfortunately, this year, one of the things that happened that showed how vulnerable the new government of Southern Sudan is was that North Sudan has closed the borders and prevented any of the trucks to go inside Southern Sudan, which put the Southern Sudan, almost in a food crisis, and they had to resort to neighboring countries, Uganda or Kenya, to get their food. Obviously, the government of Southern Sudan has a huge role to play in trying to support the food production. I know that USAID has offered money to Southern Sudan to develop its agricultural sector. Obviously, most of that burden lies in government of Southern Sudan. One of the major problems of not just the north, the south, is also the north, with huge dependency on oil, and most of that oil revenue in Southern Sudan did not go into development projects. It was more going to the payroll. So I think one of the main tasks for the new government is to see how they can use that oil money, that oil revenue, to developing the different sectors of society, agriculture.
Right, and President Obama's top envoy for Sudan urged the governments of Sudan and newly independent South Sudan yesterday to rekindle the spirit of cooperation, resolve outstanding issues, and resolve this issue of oil revenues and how it's going to be divvied up. So that's also an ongoing effort. We just have a few more moments before we need to wrap this up. Wasil, before the country gained UN recognition, South Sudan played a soccer match against a Kenyan club. It was a 3-1 loss. But can you give us a sense at all of how much these sorts of things matter within this new country to be able to field your own soccer squad?
Well, I think the excitement that among Southern Sudanese is just overwhelming at this point. I think the signs of a new state having being a new UN member, having a president sworn in, having all these recognition from all over the world. So I think every small thing that just signified a new state after more than 50 years of war and civil war and struggle for their independence, I think everything that, no matter how small it is, that just gives them the sense of being their own, having the control over their own country, I think just really gives them that joyous feeling.
Wasil Ali, Deputy Editor-in-Chief of Sudan Tribune, a nonprofit website based in France, joining us from Washington, D.C. this morning, and Jose Hulzenbeck, Head of Mission with Doctors Without Borders. We have a link to Doctors Without Borders on our website, wnyc.org. Click on the Brian Lehr page. Thank you both for joining me to talk about the new South Sudan.
Thank you.
Coming up here on the Brian Lehrer Show, we talk about food this next hour, from the food bill, or farm bill, I should say, to food trucks. Call us about your favorite food truck. This is WNYC AM and FM New York, WNYC.org. Stay tuned.